Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
I should open up to, I shouldn't be waffling on myself really, but I should be opening up to the floor for any questions. I think we have the excellent roving microphone available, which I know it's not a huge room, but I believe is for our other listeners. So who wants to kick off with a question? The bit of waffle I was talking about at the beginning about the why would somebody invest in our services right across the range here of tourism, hospitality, and cultural services. And I think you made a very good point about marketing, and is marketing enough? And I don't know about others, but I cover leisure and tourism, and they all sit together in the same office, and the tourism half of the office is fantastic at marketing. Fantastic at facts and figures, and the leisure side of the room is very good at looking at the removal of barriers, being inclusive, and trying to reach the hard to reach. And they always have a bit of an argument, and the leisure people say the tourism people make up statistics to make them look good, and the tourism people say to the leisure people, why do you hide your light under a bushel? You work in an enabling way and nobody knows what you're doing. And it's an interesting... I'm trying to get each of them to learn from each other. But there is a lot around marketing that I think... A lot of what you were saying about Derbyshire is about highlight... What is marketing? It's about highlighting what the offer is. But I wonder if culture is such a big offer... How do you hone that down and take a leaf out of tourism and hospitality's book, you know, where you can put a graph up and say, hey, that's what's on the horizon, let's go to that. So I'm going to kind of open that up to both of you or anyone in the audience. How can we be as clear on the cultural side as I think you are on the tourism and marketing side? How do we translate what we're doing into really tangible... you know, tangible things that we can sell?
Well, if I start with that, there's two elements to that. The first one, I think I touched upon with this doctoral thesis that we've commissioned. I mean, councils aren't in the habit of commissioning doctoral theses all that often, so, you know, you can see how seriously we're taking this and how important a clearer and more evidential answer to this question is to us. So that is work that's undergoing and is producing some interesting results. I think a more practically at the moment, though, is just looking at this sort of virtuous circle, that getting people in the local area engaged in cultural activity makes that area more interesting. So people come and visit the area, people come and spend more money in it. That helps the local economy. People see that that's worthwhile financially as well as their own general well-being. So that enables more activity, more events and more cultural activity to take place, which then generates more tourist income as well. So I think the two things do fit together well, because one will help to feed the other, that it isn't just the tourism industry and people visiting who benefit, it's the people actually providing events or services, some of which they're doing just for themselves, but which will nevertheless attract visitors that can create a virtuous circle.
Mm. Does anyone else want to come in on that or have a different question? We've got a couple, actually. We've got Heidi, then a gentleman at the front.
Hello there. This is a question for you, Fee. I was tweeting, so I might have missed you mention local enterprise partnerships, so forgive me if you did. But if not, my question was going to be, you said that government really need to tap into the creativity and innovation of the sector rather than creating new schemes. And I wondered what your reflection was, you know, some time into the setting up of the local enterprise partnerships, whether you got any views on their success and their impact, or whether you thought, or whether they're the things you're referring to as not necessarily being fit for a purpose.
Well, I hope that I didn't give the impression that I was suggesting local enterprise partnerships are not fit for purpose. That was not my intention at all. However, I do hope that I have given the impression that there is so much more return that we have not yet tapped into in the United Kingdom. And the only way that we can really see that and evidence that is by actually looking internationally and seeing what other countries have actually achieved, both at a local level and at the national level. Now, there is much return that can be gained. And if I may, I'd like to give an example from Scotland, if I can, just to highlight what I mean by partnership and actually looking at examples of marketing investment or the potential to be able to reach much broader audiences across the world much more effectively rather than government trying to actually put those funds in at a time when, let's face it, public spending is restricted. So we have to find other ways of doing that. And what the Scottish did was that they actually discovered that Disney were creating a movie called Brave. And they discovered this some years ago. And they actively went after Disney and worked with Disney and pulled together the industry. And we supported this effort. We were 100% behind Scotland in doing this to actually use that opportunity to get the message very, very far across the world, to really use that opportunity to create merchandise which Scotland would benefit from, not just Disney, to create marketing opportunities which Scotland would benefit from, not just Disney. They really embraced and wrapped around what this private enterprise were doing, this international private enterprise, and used that for Scotland. Now, this is something which is a very different approach, perhaps, to the approach that local enterprise partnerships have looked into thus far. So, therefore, I would hope that it could be seen as a new opportunity, a new approach to actually getting even more returns on the work that the local enterprise partnerships are doing. Look into the local areas, contact organisations such as ours or others, find out what's happening, and embrace that, create joined-up action, rather than having to struggle to actually find resources, which we really don't have many resources now in terms of public expenditure, and the local enterprise partnerships funding could be made to be so much greater by really looking at this the other way around. Flip the coin over and look into the private sector first, and then actually feed that back into local enterprise partnerships or look at ways that that can help local councils and boroughs themselves and local communities. And I'm positively sure that at the same time as looking out, one should also look in. And locally, there are going to be some fantastic examples in terms of things that are happening locally, culturally. And I would like this gentleman here to talk about an example that he told me about this morning in terms of Sheffield, where, you know, by looking in and out at things that already are there, all we need to do is connect the dots in a very strategic and smart way to generate much greater returns for the community and the economy.
Excellent. Yes, if we can, yeah. you can't escape now.
Thank you very much. Steve Laird from V4. I had a different question, actually, but I'll certainly mention Sheffield. I'd like to ask Andrew, could he share his elevator pitch for the library services? You know, across the country, library services are being challenged because of the lack of resource. A lot of the discussion's been about the economic impact of tourism, and we know that library services are predominantly used by local people and a relatively small percentage of the local community. And it would be great if you could share that elevator pitch with us, because we might be able to use it.
Okay. Well, the big debate on libraries has sort of gone into two camps, in a sense. One that sees libraries as something that a certain core of people feel very strongly about, but very expensive, and, you know, it's a shame that we have to keep funding these libraries because we've got all these adult care responsibilities and child safeguarding, etc., to do. And the other approach is to say, here is your shop window into your community. Here is the place that, whilst all these other activities go on and people value them, they don't actually ever see them, whereas a library they see every day. So if that's the centre of your activity as an authority, so you bring more and more different things into your library, like health and wellbeing zones, like broadband, like children's toy libraries, like adult education and all these other services, so that the library is actually at the centre rather than an inconvenience, you can actually save a lot of money that way. We've got two schemes in Derbyshire at the moment, one the Hub in South Normanton, one at Ashbourne Library, where instead of finding libraries difficult and an expense, we're saving money through libraries by taking lots of other extraneous buildings around that community that do different bits and pieces and putting them all into the one place. That saves money for all of those departments and actually increases people's use of the library, because obviously while they're there, or while I'm here, I'll do this, or, oh, I didn't know that was going on. So you actually generate more sustainability and save money for the authority as a whole at the same time. That's been our approach.
All right. Oh, I think we might have a question, an online or a webcam question. Is that what that is at the back? Oh, I think, sorry, and then we'll come to this lady.
Right.
How exciting. Mm-hmm. Someone who's not in the room asking a question. It's mad.
We have a question from Chris Hewitt, Economic Development and Tourism Manager, South Norfolk Council for UFI. You said you were keen to work with local authorities to develop the sector and create jobs and would touch on it later. Can you please elaborate on that?
I'd be happy to do so. I'm not sure if people here are aware of an initiative called the Big Conversation. It's an initiative which is led by business in the community, and with the blessing of business in the community, the British Hospitality Association has now created the Big Conversation for hospitality. The initiative is focused on three areas. One, tackling youth unemployment in the United Kingdom, 18 to 24-year-olds. The second is to actually drive apprenticeships, really drive apprenticeships throughout our sector. And the third is to standardise, improve, and really push out work placements for our industry. Now, with these three, what we did is on the 11th of July, we actually did a small pilot case initiative, sort of a small event to bring together just 50 of our industry's leaders to talk about what they could actually offer and pledge towards creating additional jobs. And we already got 8,000 pledges, 8,000 job opportunities just from a group of 50. Now, remember, I told you that the British Hospitality Association represents 40,000 business establishments across the United Kingdom. So even within our membership, we are confident that we'll be able to drive a huge volume of job opportunities and job creation pledges. But to make that possible, we need to work together with the local authorities. We have to work together with the local MPs. We have to make sure that this is a partnership. We have to work with you so that our businesses in your areas can actively work with the local governments to actually do these local initiatives. And we're actually starting a roadshow, which is going to take place early next year. We have regional committees at the British Hospitality Association. So we have the Heart of England, South West, South East, we have London, we have North of England, we have these regional committees. And together with our regional committees, what we will be doing is actively actually reaching out to businesses across those regions to bring them in and to actually get them also to pledge and work with us so that we can show our power in A, reaching that target of 236,000 new jobs by 2015, and show that we can actively make a difference in tackling youth unemployment in this country and giving real opportunity to the youth in your local communities. You know, our activities, if you take the high street, the most vibrant high streets are full of cafes and bars and restaurants and, you know, areas that people love to come and spend time and to talk, and that's what hospitality can offer. Now, imagine if we can actually link that with the cultural services in your local authorities, how we can transform the impact that our businesses are having locally. And, as I said earlier, to bring in those export pounds and create those jobs which will be so vital for economic viability and long-term development for those communities. So my request is really about partnership. There's one key message. It's really about actively talking with the private sector, and really we have the opportunities, we have the initiatives, we just want to make sure that we can actually work with you to start realising these win-wins.
Excellent. Okay, we've got a question here. Perhaps this might be our last question before a coffee.
Hello, I'm Isabel Siddons from the National Archives, and my question's actually a bit of a follow-up from the earlier one to Councillor Luhr about what would be your elevator pitch for archive services. My team at the National Archives works with archive services across the country to support their development. And I think the challenge for many at the moment is, because they're generally very small, the risk is that they're rather left on the back burner. Yeah. It isn't worth doing a lot of trauma of reorganisation, because the potential of cost savings, they're just not there to be realised. So we're trying to argue that, developing your service, the other side of the equation is about sort of maximising the value of your asset.
Yeah.
I'm also very, very excited about what's happening in Derbyshire, where you have actually, you know, you are actually making massive, major investment in your archive service. So I'm just wondering what your fantastic elevator pitch, how you got your whole authority on board with this vision.
Right, well, authority with a majority of the chairman's casting vote. Haven't lost a vote yet in 3.5 years by fairly iron discipline. So if you wanted some political trauma out of archives, I think we could probably provide that for you locally, given the cuts we've had to make and yet the investment we've chosen to make in archives, which I think is pretty unprecedented in the country just at the moment. We've been able to do that because of this cultural vision at the centre of the authority's activity, but also because we've been able to combine local studies activities with the archives, which has enabled more people to make use of the archives by not simply having a sort of selection of, your family history, well, there's some leaflets for you over there, and serious scholars come to the archive and look at records. But actually, everyone comes to the record office, or will do, and will therefore considerably deepen their knowledge. The family tourism element is very important to us. A lot of American and Commonwealth-wide tourism opportunities through people researching their family history and coming to look at where they came from and why their family, A, was where it was, but B, is where it is now. And also, perhaps even more unfashionably, it was simply the right thing to do, because that is Derbyshire's collective memory. That is the home of where people from Derbyshire are and why they are what they are and what's happened to make the place it is. So we have an absolute responsibility to make sure that that is preserved properly and is made as accessible as possible. So the pitch might be a slightly difficult one if people are just saying, what is the economic return from directly spending this money on the archive? But I think there will be a significant return when people come in 20 or 30 or 40 years' time and look at a place that really cares about its history and has looked after it properly.
Excellent. We sneak a quick last one in before coffee. Is that all right?
Bit of time. I'm very interested in this roadshow that you're proposing to take on the road from January next year. And, of course, I agree totally with partnership working. We do an awful lot of it in East Lindsay. But will you take in the national picture as well with such people as the DWP building their flexibility? Because many of the coastal resorts have seasonal work. And, you know, it's making it very simple. Everyone will know you have individuals sign on October time, can't access very much, and already going back to work in the spring. So I would be interested how you plan to involve such as DWP to build in some flexibility, to enable people to work in partnership and provide training within the partners' private sector during the winter months.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are actually in discussions with DWP, and we are tackling those areas. And I think, as I said, it's really about partnership. There are areas in policy and legislation, regulation, rules, guidance, that we need to actually really make sure we can work with to enable us to realise our potential. And we are doing that with the right partners. But at the local level, I think there's still a lot more that we can do. We haven't really tapped into the local level yet. At the national level, we are in a lot of discussions with the right departments.
You won't forget the local.
No, we want the local level. We want to tap into that local level now, which is why I really wanted to be here with you all today, to actually make you aware of that opportunity and to invite you to work with us. And we will definitely make sure that you're informed of when we'll be in your region so that you can come and participate and help us to achieve that.
Right, excellent. Thank you. Just before we go and have coffee, can I just remind people, if you haven't signed up for your seminar, for the one of the two, I think they're available at the end of the day, I did want to stress that the body scrub, wrap and massage offer is closed, so you might as well come back after coffee. And back here at 11:30. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.